Hi everyone, welcome to our event. This event is brought to you by Data Dogs Club, which is a community of people who love data. We have weekly events, and today is one of such events. If you want to find out more about the events we have, there is a link in the description. Click on that link and you'll see all the events we have. Tomorrow, we actually have quite an interesting workshop about LLM agents. So check it out. And if you're interested, sign up. Then, very important, if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, do it. Then this way you get notified about all the awesome future live streams like the one we have today and tomorrow. And last but not least, there is a Slack community where you can hang out with other data enthusiasts. This week, we'll talk about doing data freelancing. And we have a very special guest today, Dmitry. Dmitry is an independent data consultant. He has worked for both corporate and startup companies in 6 countries across Europe, before he made the transition to becoming a full-time freelancer in 2019. Since then, he has worked with other 40 clients, ranging from small businesses to Fortune 500. And today, we will talk about his journey, and he will share everything he learned. Well, not everything, because we only have 1 hour, but the most useful parts. And welcome to our interview.
Thank you, Alexei. Thank you for having me.
And the questions for today's interview are prepared by Johanna Bayer. Thanks, Johanna, for your help. And before we go into our main topic of becoming a freelancer and surviving as a freelancer, let's start with your background. Can you tell us about your career journey so far?
Sure. I started off studying business administration and marketing. Got my first job it was a marketing position, but it turned out into a data position very fast.
How did it actually turn into a data position? Well, I imagine like in marketing, you have all these paid marketing campaigns, like all these different campaigns, and you need to effectively measure that. This is how you ended up in data, right?
No.
No, okay.
Very simple. What was a French startup? They just wanted to translate their website into different languages. So I translated the website for them. My goal was to then, after the translation, attract users and customers to the platform, and I've done the translation, and let's say, I don't call it marketing, I call it more spamming. After I've done this for a month, more or less, my big question was, who did I attract? Who's using now our platform and everything? So it was a startup for people. I was the only marketeer despite the founder. So my goal was basically to learn SQL, make the first requests, do some analysis, cohort analysis, and so on. And and that's basically how I built some very nice infographics. And we actually used those later on to get featured in some newspapers, French newspapers. And that was pretty successful. And my founder, he was basically very happy with that. So he asked me to keep digging into the data instead of doing marketing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you originally from France?
No, I'm half German, half Italian.
Uh-huh. And now you live in Spain. And before that, you lived in France.
Correct. And before that, I also lived in Malta and the UK. Uh-huh. Yeah, a little bit everywhere.
That's amazing. Okay, so you joined the company, the French startup, as a marketing person. You became a data person because the founders they really liked the results they saw, like your dashboards. Mm-hmm. So they told you, like, how about you do this full time, right?
Again, I was there full time, but in that sense,
they just data.
Yes, yeah, because it was they start learning about their own users, what they have done about the French market, because the French market was their main market, and they never thought about, again, if you start a business, most of the time they have their one priority to survive, get clients, but they never had the time to look at the data. And again, they had actually pretty good data at that time, and it was enough to learn more about their clients, about their behavior, so we could better build basically customer profiles. And then after that experience, I wanted to see the opposite side of the startup world. So I joined Hewlett-Packard corporate world, and I joined their data department in Barcelona. And that was basically a data department of their sales team. They had a 140 people sales team. They had regional managers, a big head off, and I was directly reporting to the head of who was supervising basically those 140 people sales team. So that was pretty interesting because we did a lot of was a lot of BI involved, but also some analysis. We did specific campaigns where even the salespeople had to compete against each other, and so it was again their phone activity, the CRM data, combining everything together, specific performance KPIs that they had to hit, and we had data about it, sales data, put it all together, and again it was great fun. And so that was basically my corporate experience at that time.
You need to speak Spanish to work there?
No, at that time my Spanish was very basic. It was basically speaking Italian, just adding an S to the end and making it sound Spanish, but the team, everything was English.
Okay, because like sales, Hewlett Packard, clients sounds like something that requires the native, the language that is spoken in the country.
Definitely, if you're part of the sales team, but again, it was a European-wide sales team, so they had German speakers, they had Italian speakers, they had Norwegian, Swedish people. Like, it was a big team, again, 140 salespeople covering whole Europe.
Then did you become a freelancer after that, or you had a few other full-time jobs?
No, that was the time, basically, where I, as a business person, and having very rudimental technical skills, I just learned SQL, basically, and I had done tons of online courses around programming and reading up on big data and data science at that time. So at that moment, I said to myself, I really want to learn more about this world. I can't do it just by myself, and I can't do it just after work. I need to dive deep full-time into this. So I decided to do a master's program, basically covering data science topic, such as supervised learning, NLP, again, just various statistical classes. And yeah, so I did this at University College London. It was a very challenging year, but learned a lot. And basically that year then led me to my next position where I earned the title as a data scientist, which at that time I was very proud of. And I joined something in between a startup and a corporate. I call it a scale up. And at that time it was an online casino based in Malta.
That's how you ended up in Malta after yes. The UK.
Yes, correct. You're trying to map out my journey.
Ah. And I think it's quite common for online casinos to be either in Malta or Cyprus, right?
Yes, correct. Due to legislations and I think the whole ecosystem overall. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I basically joined them.
Okay.
And there basically the goal was, again, connected to marketing, connected to data science. So the first more data science-y project in marketing basically evolved. And it was not anymore a smaller data team. It was already a bigger team. We were like 12 people with 4 data engineers, several data scientists, some statisticians, and some BI specialists. So we were supporting all each other, learning from each other. So that was a very great experience. But it was, I have to mention, it was a short experience because at that time, my now wife, she moved to Germany. So I want to follow her. And in that case, I switched and made my last move. My last step before becoming a freelancer, and that was a Google partner consulting firm. So now I'm at the Google partner consulting firm. Again, they are basically specialized in digital analytics and conversion optimization. So they were working with all the Google Marketing Cloud, and that was basically their core business. But as they had very good ties to their clients, and they basically learned a lot through them. They basically didn't want to stop the relationship once those Google products were implemented, but now they wanted to offer additional service. That's why they started building up the small data science team, which I was part of. And yeah, and while I was there, basically, I learned everything to start off my freelancing business because, again, it was my first touch point with the world of consulting.
So this company, Google Partner Consulting Firm, mm-hmm. So they either already doing consulting and you saw, interesting, I can do this myself too. And then you saw how actually it works and you made the switch, right? This is how it happened.
More or less. I mean, the switch also happens because of, let's say, who I am and my nature. I mean, I enjoyed all the places where I worked. I made great friends, which I'm still in touch with today. But I have this nature where I always thought that it could go better. And I was often, sometimes loudly and sometimes just internally complaining how businesses should use data. And I saw things that I thought this doesn't add any value to the business. These are just ivory tower fund projects, but again, no value. And after you complain to your wife many nights, she will tell you to basically do it better and do it yourself then. And that was basically the motivator after so many years, because I felt like in a short range, I was jumping around from one company to another, which was on the one side was great because I learned a lot. On the other side, your CV, your corporate CV, let's say like this, didn't look that great because companies, every time you interview, they ask, are you going to stay here or are you going to move on? Which is, of course, a totally expected question.
So for a freelancer, this is like they kind of know the answer, right?
Yes.
Because they hire you for a short amount of time. So they don't even ask that.
Yes. And I think the value of a freelancer is exactly that. You have seen lots of different scenarios or very similar scenarios at different companies. And that's exactly the reason why they hire you, because you have seen it more than once.
Then you were complaining to your wife about not liking certain things. And then she said, like, do it yourself, do it better. And then you're like, okay, I'm becoming a data freelancer.
Correct.
Right. Well, what happened next after that? Like, what were the steps you made after this discussion? So your wife kind of approved this idea.
I mean, there was a not one discussion, but multiple. But at some point, I told myself, now it has to be, it's about time. So I resigned from the company. I had, if I remember right, I think 6 months, I don't remember exactly, like the notice period. And in that period, basically, I started reaching out to anyone that I could think of or find of.
So you resigned, but you did not have a client yet.
No, I just resigned because I was a little bit frustrated at the time. And again, I thought everything starts off by basically pulling out the bad tooth, you know? And I was, so that was basically the reason.
Like, you need to make the jump.
Correct.
Because I had this conversation with one of the recruiters. It was 4 years ago, maybe. I remember I had a business trip to Amsterdam, and then in Amsterdam, they called. So what he told me was like, hey, I have this, a bunch of amazing clients, and your data science expertise will be very helpful for clients. And like he said that they give 1,000 or 1,500 per day, which was an insane amount of money. And where do you sign? And then he said, what's your notice period? And I'm like, 4 months. And we actually need somebody next week, right? And then, and I started asking him, how can I, become a freelancer? Because this particular client would not wait for me, for 4 months, right? And he said, you first quit, then you wait for your notice period, then you give me a call, right? And then maybe we will have another client for you. And I'm I'm not so sure about that.
Sounds risky, right?
Yeah, because I already have a job and this is a well-paid job, right? I like my job. And quitting it and waiting for 4 months for something that might be available, might not be, it's not clear. There is so much unknown there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And you made the leap, right?
Yeah, I made the jump. I just jumped into the cold water, basically. And basically handing in this resignation, I was already swallowing down a thick something that I thought, okay, now I have 4 months basically to get ready for this. And what should I do next? So basically I did my research. I reached out to, first of all, people in my network at the time, which are, again, startup network that I've met, told them that I was going freelance. But of course, from those people, I didn't hear anything back. Then the next step was I reached out to other data freelancers that I could find off on LinkedIn, for example. And unfortunately, I couldn't find that many. I found some, but not as many as I was hoping for. But those I found, they were kind enough to jump on a call. And basically, I asked them a bunch of questions on how they started off and any advice they could give me.
It was people who you already knew, or no. It was like you... did cold outreach. So correct. Like you see that this, they have a freelancer in their title, then you would probably craft a welcome, like, you know, this connection message when you connect with somebody on LinkedIn. I'm like, I want to do a freelance, like I want to start freelancing. Can I ask you a few questions?
Something like that, right? Correct. Exactly that. I mean, I always like to use my little Google trick where you say things like, you know, like site colon LinkedIn slash in. So whatever you type afterwards, you only get LinkedIn profiles. And then I just wrote down like data freelance or data scientist freelancer and different terms like this. And then I got a couple of profiles and I was making sure that they are at that time based either in Germany or in Europe, because I was still in Germany at that time and I had to register as a freelancer in Germany. And so I want to make that their experience and the advice they will give me is relevant to basically outside my field. And
that's why you moved to Spain, right? Because like it's so difficult to register in Germany as a freelancer.
I don't remember if it was that difficult, but I made it. I made it at the end. And yeah.
Because like there are companies who you can pay to do this for you, because like it's not easy.
Yeah, indeed. But yeah, at the end, made it. And again, got some great advice from the few people that were kind enough at the time to talk to me. And the last thing that I was doing was similar to what you just said. You talked to a recruiter who told you that your experience is relevant. And I had some reaching out to me before, which also kind of encouraged me that there is a need for me out there as a freelancer. And that's why I thought, hey, let me reach out to that recruiter, and not only him, but also all others that I could find and tell them, hey, on this date, I will be a freelancer. Provide me a project, basically. Mm-hmm. And that was how I started before I actually started officially being a freelancer.
Was it just one recruiter or multiple?
Multiple. If I had the 4 months, so...
They don't have like exclusivity, right? So you can be with multiple recruiters.
You can be with multiple recruiters, but if you apply for a project, you should apply only through one. Otherwise, you eliminate yourself because two recruiters will present your profile and then they have kind of a conflict. So then they will have to eliminate you. That's why you can only go with one recruiter if it's for the same position.
Uh-huh. So there is a company and you see that this, you know, that this company looks for a freelancer, then with the recruiter, you select the recruiter who you like more, right? And then ask them to represent you? Or...
More or less. Again, just to make for the listeners, what we talk now often, I would call this contracting. And it's part of freelancing. But again, I think it's the specific route that I think just needs to be addressed. And contracting is usually when a company says, I need to hire someone, but this person is not a full-time employee, but let's say a freelancer, which I can hire for 3, 6, 12 months. And then after that period, I can basically let go of that person. And
It's called contracting, right?
Yeah, that's contracting. And again, you kind of have a specific contract with them. And sometimes it can also be that you kind of are working 40 hours a week for them. So you are kind of a full-time employee, but you're not. So...
They can easily, like your contract is limited, right? It's only for a certain amount of time.
Correct.
And then I guess both sides can end this contract sooner, right?
Yes, correct.
They don't need to wait till the contract is over. Like you don't need to have this notice or 4 months. I assume correct. It's much faster.
Correct. And yeah, again, there are also things tied to it that you have to be careful as a freelancer if you go into this route, because there are things like a fake freelancer, and different countries have different names for it, but basically it's like a fake freelancer where the company is saving lots of money because they hire someone external and they basically just pay them the project fee, and you as a freelancer basically only depend on the salary of one client. So actually the client, the company, they should pay their, like, the typical legal contribution to healthcare and so on, but in this case they don't. So that's why the freelancer needs to be careful not to tap into like this fake freelancing thing once they do their tax declarations. Just throwing it out there for those who have thought about it. So it's always important to, again, have multiple clients, and if one is interested going that contracting route, that's just something to be aware of. Not to put all your eggs in one basket and focus too much on this contracting.
And going back to this recruiter situation, because I am a bit confused. So let's say you got a call from one recruiter, they get your CV, and then you get a call from another recruiter, and you also share your CV with them. So they kind of both represent you, right? And then you want to, like, there is a company, there you want to work. And so I understand this is called contracting, but like, how do you exactly deal with these two recruiters situation?
Well, the way it usually works is that it starts off with a company that wants to hire data analyst, a data scientist, a data engineer, let it be. And they basically, especially in the corporate world, most of them that reach out to recruiters, they have their recruiter network. So they basically send them out an email and saying, like, to all their recruiters, hey, recruiters, we are looking for this type of profile. Find us someone. So now the recruiters get that profile and they basically send it to their network. And that could be a freelancer like me. And now I could be in the network of two different recruiters. So now both of them send this profile to me and say, like, are you interested in applying for this profile? So I can talk either to one of them or both of them and ask them who is the client, get some information. And once I have this information, I could either decide to go with one of them. But I should also, for example, in the past, apply to one client. Another recruiter approached me and I tell them, like, hey, I already applied for this position through another recruiter. So, and they will know that, of course, you won't apply because you don't want to eliminate yourself.
And by eliminate yourself, it means that when the company see that, like, there are two recruiters and the same person, they do not consider this person.
Correct. Good question. I can't give you an exact answer. I should ask a recruiter, but I only know that they always tell me, like, and usually they ask also if you have applied to this project through another recruiter, or they warn you. They say, hey, if someone else approaches you about this project, don't apply through them. And maybe it's a fake myth. Maybe it's a fake myth. Maybe it's the way that, you know, they increase their chance of placing you at a client. But
yeah, I understand. Okay. We have quite a few questions, actually. So maybe we take some of them because I think it's relevant to our discussion. Sure. So how do you know what to charge when you first start out? Like, I quit my full-time job.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the notice period. And then there is a potential client. And then they ask, how much do you charge? And then what do I tell them?
Again, there are different ways of getting clients. And I have to mention that because it depends on how I charge. And let's just go through very typical ways how I could get a client first. And then I answer that question, if that's okay. Usually there are, let's say, four types of channels that usually freelancers get clients. The first one are online freelancing platforms such as Upwork, for example. There are clients that put their project on. You can basically create a profile and then directly apply to them. And here, the pricing I charge depends on my experience, my profile. If I'm new on a platform like Upwork and I don't have any star rating, for example, then, of course, it's hard for me to charge very high prices because the client will see my profiles, things like, oh, is this person actually real? They've never done anything on here. So, of course, it's very hard to get into that. It also depends on the nature of the project. If it's a very, you need some very specific LLM skills and, you know, things that are very new and only some people are very specialized in it, maybe then yes, you can command a higher price because there's not as much competition out there. So, again, in this case,
just want to make sure I understood you correctly. So there is this online freelancing platforms like Upwork. And if somebody needs some work, so they kind of create a listing.
Yes.
And then you as a freelancer and other freelancers see this listing.
Yes, correct.
And think, okay, like, this is the job. I can do this job. And this is how much I want to charge for this, for my services.
Correct.
And in the job, you see what kind of things they need. So you can put the price higher if they require something unique that not many people have. Or like if it's a typical data science project and then you haven't done many projects in the past on Upwork, you don't have like any ratings, then you probably should go for a lower price. So they pick you
up.
And then you get stars and you get the reviews, right?
So basically every channel, every situation, it depends on the client, it depends on you, needs to have their specific, let's say, strategy, how you approach it. And in this case, for example, if I'm new to a platform like Upwork and I'm very, let's say, average analyst, I can create dashboards, I can create some analysis, but there's nothing, let's say, where you say, hey, I have 10 years of special experience, or I'm very good with an outstanding experience or something. Sometimes you have to compete on price to get started, because your goal is to increase your reputation, get 5-star reviews on those platforms, and that could be one way. So how you find your rate for this type of channel, usually by checking out other freelancer profiles on Upwork, seeing what they usually charge. I believe platforms like Upwork and Fiverr, you can have like, I think, a premium subscription as a freelancer. So you get a little bit more insights about the project, how many other people have applied to it, what bids did the other freelancer give, what types of basically range of the project they basically applied for. Yes. So you can see, okay, people for this project, let's just invent a number, gave $1,000 for this project, and then as a minimum, and maybe the maximum was 3,000. And now you come in with 500, you know, and as an example. But again, it's not just price. There are so much other things going on. But I mean, that's how I would approach those platforms. Then the second channel, we just discussed it. It's like the contracting, and it's basically talking to recruiters. And here I would, again, do some research. There are some platforms such as, I think, Freelancer Map. I think freelancer.com, if I'm not wrong. And there are kind of like directories where freelancers have their profile. And you can go and scout those freelancers, compare yourself to them, figure out what do they charge by hour, by day, for example, and get a good feeling for that. And when you talk to the recruiters, usually the recruiter knows exactly what this client is willing to pay. Like usually they tell you, like, if it's we have a range between, I don't know, 80 to 100 euros an hour, or 100 to 120. I mean, usually the client has to tell the recruiter, otherwise the recruiter can't find a suitable candidate for that. So you can ask the recruiters, you can tell them, like, do you know what is the client willing to charge? And then based on that, you can basically pick your number.
Here it's more like give or take. You don't really
correct
have a lot of negotiating.
That's sometimes the good part of it, because as long as you tick the boxes and you basically have the skills that the client is requesting for, ask. I mean, usually the recruiter has the interest of basically placing you there. So they just tell you what the client is willing to charge, and you can basically say, yes, fine with me or not.
And usually from my experience with interacting with these recruiters, even though I did not land any contract in the past, usually they give this... like the sum up front, and usually it's quite a good one. So the one I told you about, it was like 1,000 or more. Like, it's quite large. I think most of them were lower, but still they would just tell you up front, like, okay, it's 800 per day. Mm-hmm. Right, and this is what the client has money for. Like, they won't get anything.
Correct. So that's why their goal is basically to make money out of you or other candidates that they are able to place. So they will be very transparent with you. Their goal is to give you good feedback so that your application basically has an impact on their client. And so the best thing is, if you talk to them, be open, be upfront, ask them the questions. I mean, usually they don't have a reason to hide things. Sometimes they want to be careful at the beginning to tell you who's the client and little things like this. But regarding basically the application part, they are pretty open about that. Then I mentioned before there are more channels to get clients.
Two more to go, right?
Yes. The third one is usually the network. And how I see it, and how also other freelancers that I talk to with the network, we usually don't just mean LinkedIn, because people think always about network is equal to LinkedIn. But usually network is the companies and the people that work in companies that you actually know and are have a very close relationship to, or at least hold a regular relationship with. And with those clients or companies that are in your network, if you have a close relationship, you hear what they work on, you hear if they're looking for someone. And a network like this, you don't have it from day one. You build it up, and it can even start like I did. I started out on Upwork, got to know the first few companies there, had very small projects with them, nothing that I'm basically proud of mentioning, like in terms of I made a lot of money. But it was getting to know the people, getting to know the industry, the business they are in, and after delivering good projects, asking them if they know other people that need my services. And basically those people then referred me to other friends or colleagues or other departments, depending always on the client. And yeah, so basically that was how I built up my network and how other freelancers basically built up their network and get more projects through them.
Yeah, and fourth?
And the fourth one is basically the magic of marketing. And here, I think it really depends on some people try different approaches. Some try really the cold approach, emailing people. Some others are very innovative. The other day, I read from some other freelancer that they try to scout data profiles on LinkedIn that are kind of not realistic. And we probably have seen them all, where a company is looking for someone that has only 1 year of experience, but knows tons of tools and tons of stuff. And they are pretty sure that they won't be able to fill that position. So they reach out to the company and tell them, like, as long as you're looking for someone, maybe I can help you. I mean, again, there are different, let's say, marketing channels, tactics, tricks, but that's for me like the fourth channel where people are very creative. And
mm-hmm. So if you, let's say, post regularly on LinkedIn and among other posts also kind of advertise your services, that would be the fourth
channel, right? For example, self-marketing, let's call it like this.
That's also called outreach. And if somebody found you through, I guess if it's like your friend or other company, then it would be the third approach, network. And if they found you through your LinkedIn post, it would be the fourth one.
Correct, right? Correct.
Yeah. And like you said, when we, you know, 20 minutes ago, you said that there is a distinction, there is a difference between contracting and freelancing.
Yes.
Right. So contracting is a second approach where we have recruiters. But what is freelancing? Like, how is it different? Like, what's the difference between these two?
Well, I would say that, first of all, as a freelancer, you are like a business entity. And it basically means that you are independent, independent from other companies. You're not an employee. You work at the time you want. You work for the rate you want. You work at the place you want. No company can tell you where to work from. So that's the first thing. And contracting is just one sub. It's part of freelancing. But again, it's one, I think, bucket below it, basically, where you can say as a freelancer, yes, I'm freelancing on Upwork, doing some projects there. I have my network. And maybe I have a contracting a project going on with a client. So there are different ways. But the important part is that a freelancer is independent in any sense, basically, and it's their own business entity.
Let's say with Upwork, you don't necessarily have any strict contracts, like, I don't know, 12 pages, 20 pages contracts that you sign in German, right? It's more like through the platform, right?
Yes. Well, you sign their terms and conditions and...
But like, it's not the contracts there, I guess, are different from what you would get. Like, let's say if you worked on site with a client only for 4 months, right? So that would be the contract. While in online freelancing, Upwork, it's like more remote, more flexible. Maybe the contract is different, right?
Yes, correct. It all depends on the contract and the nature. Also, each channel has their own nature of projects. As you can imagine, Upwork has tons of projects which are very small and limited in terms of quick ones to turn around. And yes, sometimes there are also smaller companies or also there are even large companies on there looking for similar to contracting, where they try to hire you for a long period of time. But the goal is usually, that's the good thing about Upwork, it's kind of tries to keep down in terms of a project. And whereas if you sign through a recruiter, there's usually a very defined contract made through them between you and the contractor and the end client.
And let's say if you find a company through your network, I don't know, let's take an example, Zalando, which is like a large online e-commerce, right?
Yeah.
So like you can find... There are freelancers who might represent Zalando, right? And there are people in the company who you know, right? Who can tell you, like, okay, we're looking for a freelancer. And in one case with a recruiter, you have a recruiter who helps you with the process, who probably know, like, how the contract should look like and all that. And in case of the other case, Like there's nobody in between. It's just you and the company.
Of course.
Is it still called contracting?
Good question. I never thought about it this way, but now you catch me off guard. But no, in that sense, basically, is also, that's the beauty. If you go through the middleman, which is the agency or the recruiter, the relationship is very much defined by them and Zalando, and basically you're just the service provider. If I have a contact at Zalando and I can directly work with them, I usually have a whole way of framing the whole project, and I can, it might be completely different because maybe they need a marketing data scientist for their media mix modeling, for example. Mm-hmm. And now they say, hey, we need a 4 month, some data scientist that can help us through that. So now they talk to the recruiter finds me and I can work with them. But if they would have talked to me directly, I might have said, yes, I can build that with you, but I can also bring on maybe some subcontractors that I work with. Instead of selling my time by hour, I could have used different pricing models for that. I could have framed it as more as a project, for example. And that's the freedom that you have when you can directly talk to the end client. And that's why I wouldn't call that contracting that much as the first approach with the recruiter.
Mm-hmm. So which one, I guess each has pros and cons, but like for somebody who starts, the option with the recruiter is better or?
I mean, if you start out and you have a contact at Zalando and you know exactly how to deliver everything, I mean, why going with a recruiter? Because you already know what you're going to deliver. Mm-hmm. But most people who start out, they don't have the network yet. And usually going with a recruiter is the easy way in. And to be honest, yes, the recruiter will take part of basically the budget, but you also have kind of a secure first project with a nice contract. And usually it's a safe way in. And at least it gives you some, let's say, money for the beginning, because usually the agency or the recruiter has their agreement with the end company, how they get the money. And you as a freelancer get the money from the agency. And sometimes you have the contract that they pay you out every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, or like by month. And that could kind of be like a small salary. And especially at the beginning, I think that could be also usually the nice way in.
And yeah, with agencies, I assume they have some sort of agreement, like non-compete or how it's called, where like after, let's say, your contract for 4 months ended and somebody from Zalando says, oops, I have a project here, but don't tell your recruiter. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not going to work. You still need to work through the recruiter.
I mean, you don't have to. I mean, contracts are there to be broken. So it really depends. I mean, if there's the case, because there's also a incentive for both parties to skip the recruiter, because they pay less, you earn more. You basically, you meet in the middle, because now what the recruiter was basically taking away, that's what you basically split in half. And so there's a benefit for both of them. Mm-hmm. But usually companies like Zalando, they also have an interest to have a strategic interest of having long-term relationship with those recruiters. And that's why they don't like to go by these rules and basically stick to them, because they already have their process set up. They're not that easily corruptible. It's a similar thing on Upwork, where you're supposed to do all the projects on Upwork. But who says that after maybe a project, you take the client and you both go outside of Upwork? Because now you know each other, you trust each other, and it's a different thing. So that one is also possible, for example.
And hope nobody from Zalando's legal team is listening to the conversation. Also, this is just an example, right? We just use it as an example.
Just fictitious example.
Yeah. So it's maybe a different company with the same name, right? Okay. There is another question. Mm-hmm. I think you partly answered that, but maybe there's something you can add. So how do you go about looking for freelance jobs? Do you have any favorite websites? Is there any way to vet the requester to make sure that they actually pay after the project is done? So probably there are two questions in one. So we can start with the first one. How do you go about looking for freelance jobs? And I think you kind of gave the answer already with these four ways. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I mean, again, I can repeat them for that listener. Basically, again, usually like online freelancing platforms such as Upwork, TopTal, I don't know, there are different ones, then going through recruiters, which are basically connected already to the end client, your own network that you build up for any basically self-marketing that you can do, write maybe your blog, promote your knowledge, have a portfolio online where people basically can see. That's basically the typical way of getting clients.
Yeah, so it was about checking the how good the clients are, about the reputation. You want to make sure that they would actually pay. Mm-hmm. How can you do that? And if there is any like website, like, I don't know, Google Maps, kind of, where you can see like reviews from other freelancers?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to online freelance platforms, as mentioned before, Upwork, there you as a freelancer, but also the client, both get like the typical 5-star or like the star rating after every project. And when you apply to a new project, you can basically see how good is the other party, basically the client that you apply for. If you go through recruiters, again, usually there are real businesses and they often have a Google Maps, they have their Google Business account, and there you can also get feedback from them. And that basically concludes it. So far, but to be honest, that's a question that I often hear. I don't know how many people had bad experience with that. I have had, or I've been working with clients, I think, from all over the world, and I haven't had any problem with clients paying me. I mean, I had other types of problems, but not that they don't pay me.
Usually, from what I know, and it's also my experience running a community, that the problem is not that they don't have money. The problem is that it's very bureaucratic. So you often need to wait till you actually get paid, especially in big companies where like there is this procurement department, there is finance department, they need to talk to each other. And then you need like somebody goes on vacation, they forget about you, then you need to constantly ping them. Did you have this sort of experience?
Not that much. Maybe I haven't worked with too many those large companies, but even I've worked, I'd say probably at least around 10 of them. And again, so far, they were good clients, paid on time, very simple to work with. But again, very large clients, there are only a few of them. There are tons of medium-sized businesses that do a lot of data work and that have very attractive budgets, and they don't have those strict processes. And with them, you can very easily, I mean, you have a project with someone in there, could be a chief marketing officer or someone, you send them their CV, your invoice at the end of the project or upfront, depending on how you charge them. And they just forward it to their finance department, they pay it out. And I mean, very simple.
Yeah. Or if it's a startup, the founder just PayPals you the money, right?
Yes.
And then, yeah, it was done. Okay. A question from Alexei. Is freelance a good idea for a second job? Like, I guess the question is, like, I already have a full-time job, and, like, after six, it's kind of boring. I don't just want to lie down on the sofa and check TikTok.
Yeah.
I want to do something else. Can I do freelancing?
Good question. I mean, you can definitely do freelancing. There are different ways of how to transition into freelancing. Some people do, I call it the weekend freelancer. Let's say, hey, let me test the waters, and they usually do it with those online freelancing platforms because they are small projects on them. They only get that small picture of how the whole freelancing world is because they only spend a small amount of time, but at least they can have very good experiences and find some attractive weekend projects on there. Then there's the transitioning phase where people say, hey, I have a part-time job. I need additional income. So, of course, they have more time to dedicate freelancing. There's the full-time jump into the cold water, the plunge that I did, basically. And there are people that basically try to hustle their way. And every time their work is off, they have an extra hour. They try to get a client and they try to build this freelancing gig up on the side until they say, hey, it's enough so I can cover my bills. And now I will quit my job and I'll move into it. So there are different ways that lead to Rome. Some are more dangerous than others.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And dangerous in the sense that like somebody can notice that you're kind of trying to work two jobs at the same time, right?
I mean, that probably depends on the contract you have with the first company. Yeah. I don't know.
It might be okay. It might not be okay, right?
That's
okay.
A problem I don't have anymore, so.
But also could be like health related, right?
Yeah.
Because like it's difficult to work. Like if you do your work properly, it's like 8 plus 8 hours per day. Or like, I don't know, in a week, it's 80 hours, whatever way you distribute these hours throughout the week. But then it's kind of difficult for your brain to do all that, right?
Yeah. And specifically, I mean, we have to think about why do people get into freelancing in the first place? And for me, it was basically a little bit of frustration on how data has been used in different companies. But also, I always had this, let's say, entrepreneurial urge where I always want to be, let's say, my own boss and have the freedom and free time. Again, I have families in different countries, so I don't want to take out vacation days to visit them. I just want to go there and work from their place. And again, so it's, I think getting into freelancing, it starts off with a purpose or a motivation. It's not always about getting rich fast or something like this. It is definitely a way of how you can make a very nice living, but it's not guaranteed because it's your own business. There's a risk. 1 month you earn a lot of money and you're very happy and very proud. The other month something happens and everything is gone again and you have to start from the bottom up again. So again, it's your own business. And I think running a business involves risk and everyone needs to kind of be aware of that.
Would it be difficult for you personally to just get a full-time job now with this experience?
Yes, totally, totally. Because the first year I was anxious. Will I survive? Will I make this work? And this year, basically, my first son was born. I took a 4 month off on parental leave and I basically stopped all my projects until then. And I thought, how is life going to be when I am back, basically? And I got back and I had tons of requests again because I have good client relationships and I have so many other ideas that I want to implement. And I feel like, I don't know, I always like this example of when you learn something new, like this new mental mind map kind of starts appearing. It's like when you used to play, I don't know, Super Mario Brothers, and now you finished one level and now there's like a new whole new map opening up and you start from level one. And that's the same thing with being a freelancer, because you don't just work on your data skills and delivering the data services, but you do marketing, you do accounting, you do different things, and it's never ending. And it's basically if you enjoy that part, it's very fulfilling. And I couldn't imagine being part of a company, at least not for now. There are too many things that I want to try out that I enjoy. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the reason I ask this question is like, let's say I want to make this leap and quit my job and then start freelancing. But then in a year, I find out that, it's not working the way I imagined. Then I guess like you kind of still don't lose the skills. You get extra ones like marketing and like accounting and all that. Mm-hmm. But then you can still get back to full-time job. And what you said is like, yeah, I don't need that because even after a 4 month break, you still had a ton of requests, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Again, maybe for other people, it's different. If you start out, that's why when people want to get into freelance, and I always advise them, put money aside. When I started out, I had around 8 months that I gave myself time. Odd number, but I told myself 8 months. If you don't make any money by then you have to get a job again. And yeah. Luckily, I made it work.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking at the outline, the things we wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one is typical mistakes that maybe it's worth covering too. So what are the typical mistakes when people want to become a freelancer or in general during freelancing?
I think they are in, first of all, for the wrong reason. Again, they have expectation that they can earn a lot of money. And that's usually the number one that I often hear. They maybe have, I'm just want to point out some cases that I've seen. Maybe they have a PhD, they feel they're very much educated, they have very good skills in a particular field. And now just because they have this skill, they think they can command high prices. They don't know anything about how they position themselves as a freelancer, how they have to approach a client. but they still think that their value is, they ask way too much, basically. And then, of course, there's this delusion where they don't land any project. And at the end, they blame it on Upwork as a platform where only small projects are, or Upwork has too many freelancers bidding on small hourly fee. You know, I cannot compete on this level, you know. Again, those people are in for the wrong reason, because they don't want to understand the whole freelancing game. So that's usually the first mistake that I see. And I think another very obvious mistake that I often see is generally positioning. I want to be a freelancer. How do I position myself? Want to focus on a specific niche, on a specific problem that I want to solve? Or am I this generalist that knows some things very well, out of different ways, and I can connect things? But again, I don't say one way is better than the other way, because some people just say you always have to find the niche. That's not always true. It's really about the positioning. So even as a generalist, you can find your way into freelancing. It's just the way how you basically deliver yourself to the client. What is the value that you provide to them? Because you have the spectrum of knowledge as a generalist, maybe you want to go in there at the beginning, compete on price, compete on time to delivery. Do you want to give any guarantees to the client? There are so many ways on how you can compete. It's not just price. And your offering really depends who you talk to, who's your audience, and just overall positioning. That's something that I see lots of other freelancers that don't survive, let's say, the first month.
How can I learn more about this positioning?
Yeah.
Are there resources, or it's just by you learn by doing?
I mean, you always learn by doing, especially the hard way, but that sometimes can take too long. I was lucky that I, in my undergrad, studied business and marketing, and where I learned a lot about that. But there are, I think, overall different resources one could take. First of all, I think there are some pretty good online marketing courses one could take. The problem is often those people are also very much motivated into technical data skills. So instead of investing the time in business or marketing skills, then they prefer to do the ChatGPT online course or something like this, prompt engineering. And there are, I think, lots of also mentors to find out there. And yeah, even I myself, I run this newsletter for freelancers, and I try to give advice, and I try to make sure that the advice is always very diverse, not only on finding clients, but also on mental health, how to stay motivated, how to organize your work, and so on. Yeah, so I think there's information out there, and there are probably also people out there that want to help, but I think it starts with the mindset and the purpose, why you're in it.
And speaking of skills, what you mentioned is, like, if you want to start freelancing, you shouldn't just focus on technical skills, on hard skills, so to say. I mean, by hard, I mean, like, programming, data analysis, ChatGPT, whatever, like these sort of skills. You also need to think about, in our example, it was positioning, and this is a concept for marketing.
Yeah.
So then it's a good idea to go and get a marketing course, right?
Yeah.
Where they say, like, how do you position a product on a market, right?
Yeah. Just to name one, because I do them myself once in a while, just to stay updated. And there's, like, this new online platform, I think, called Domestika out there. And they basically have pretty nice online courses. Now it's Black Friday. And yeah, you can find them, and they have some online course for $8 or €8. And I think there's one or two very good one on positioning. And I've done one of them, and I've done several ones in the past. So I always try to update myself. I like to also see who are the instructors who do those courses. What type of business do they have? How do they position themselves? Even though they might be a completely different industry, they could be a graphic designer. There could be, I mean, other industries, because, I mean, at the end, we are freelancers, and we all try to basically be our own business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you are the product you want to advertise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all we have time for today. There is actually a lot more questions I wanted to ask you. There are also a lot of questions that the listeners wanted to ask you. Like, we still have 8. Is it okay if somebody... if they still want the questions answered, contact you on LinkedIn or...
Yeah, sure. As I mentioned before, also subscribe to my newsletter, The Data Freelancer. Usually I have this part where you get my emails, and if people reply to the emails with a question, what I talked about, I always reply back. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's all for today. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Dmitry, for joining us today. Thanks, everyone, for joining in too. And have a great week ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, have a great week.
Bye.